And exactly what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Legal Profession Act that we have now was brought in 1992. And so I don't think that there are many people who would say that we are not overdue for a little touch-up or revamp.
Okay.
And what we are seeking to do with the new Legal Profession Act is to update the legislative provisions to meet the expectations of the public and the profession itself. I think that there's an assumption that the Bar Council has certain powers that under the legislation that we have, we don't. That would be useful in tackling some of the things that that concern both members and the public. And we also know that the legal profession has and continues to evolve, and we want an act that not only meets the present need but has a future focus. And so, yes, we see the need for that. We see that it is an urgent thing. We're talking about practicing certificates and increased regulatory supervision. We're also talking about things like specializations and practice areas, and so you would find that the bar has continued to grow at an exponential rate. I think that for example, the ethics committee, our ethics committee is capped at 5 members.
Okay.
So we have potentially 1,300 members, you know, in thereabouts. And the ethics committee, and we have 2 disciplinary tribunals, which again, a circumscribed number. So we need to be able to increase with the size of the bar, we need to be able to increase our ability to adjudicate complaints mm-hmm. and whatnot, because the bar continues to grow. I don't discourage that. I always say that one of my favorite occasions annually are the various call ceremonies where you get to see new lawyers come and join the profession. Everybody remembers their call day. And so we really have to update the legislative infrastructure to allow us to deliver a product that our members and the public deserve.
Where's your office located?
We are on Clare Street, Clare Road and Mackey Street, right on the corner. The old, I forget what you would call that. I forgot what it's called now. But yes, on the corner of Clare Road and Mackey Street.
Okay, near the restaurant, in front of the restaurant?
Yes.
Okay, I understand. Sunny something.
Sunny Haven.
Yes. And like I said, I had a question by text where it's asking about reckless and seemingly, mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to use the word crazy, but seemingly odd mm-hmm. behavior for lawyers mm-hmm. who's apparently are called to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And have you had any complaints about behaviors of lawyers in social media? And what does the Bar Association do if there are complaints or someone seemed to be embarrassing the standard of
Well, one of the things profession? That what I would point out is that it is a breach of the Bar Code of Professional Conduct to conduct yourself in a way that lowers the profession in the eyes of the public.
So I can't go on the beach like with my video camera and say, your tourists got to move?
No, that's different. That's a political statement. I mean, I'm presuming you're making a political statement.
I'm just making this whole thing.
I don't know that we are necessarily interested in adjudicating speech per se, but what I would say is that when you are a member of the bar, you are expected to have a certain understanding of and reverence for due process, the administration of justice, the rule of law. So you expect it to be somewhat circumspect in your utterances because people take them a certain way. If a lawyer is doing this, then must be that we could behave in that way or this way. And so it is in keeping with our understanding that we have a societal function, that we have to make sure that our members are not out there abusing the privilege it is to be an attorney. And so that is something that is properly the subject of a complaint. I don't comment on pending complaints. That is not for me. That is for the procedures and processes in place. What I would say is that if anybody has seen anything that they think violates the Bar Code of Professional Conduct, you could find out what that entails on the website. You can go and you can go online.
Mm-hmm.
And if you find yourself in a situation where you believe a lawyer has behaved in a manner that contravenes those strictures, do make a complaint. That's all I would say in that regard.
But there's an outline, what is the code of conduct is, and mm-hmm. I can analyze it and read
mm-hmm.
it. Okay. I have another text here was asking, is it the Bar Association that is blocking these foreign law practices from practicing in the Bahamas?
I mean, it's a matter of law. The legal profession, and you'll see this on the website, you know, you cannot be admitted to the bar unless you are a citizen of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Mm. Simpliciter. That's a red line. However, we do have provision, as you will see. You will see in trials going on, you'll hear of Katie Knight coming from Jamaica or this or that QC coming from the UK. We do have a provision for special admission in matters of complexity or that warrant, in the opinion of bar counsel, the admission of counsel for those particular matters. You can be admitted to practice for those limited purposes.
And I hear you, Noah, and I was going to let you continue.
Yes.
But I remember the director of public prosecution. I think that's the department. You all had foreign lawyers inside there.
You can be admitted to work, to again, specially admitted, for the purpose of working for the government.
Oh, okay.
You know, we had an issue with that recently where people, but you have to be fundamentally qualified within the terms of the Legal Profession Act. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that you could come from anywhere. You have to have the relevant qualifications. But the citizenship requirement, you can be specially admitted around that. You just cannot be admitted simpliciter to practice.
So I just want to make this be clear because I have people who are concerned.
Yes.
Because you're saying that you can be foreign.
Yes.
Not necessarily called to the Bahamas bar if you are employed by the government for something.
For the duration of your engagement in that public office.
I understand. I did not know that. Yeah. I did not know that. So I appreciate that.
No, we've had a few directors and DPPs over the years who have not been Bahamians.
Yes.
But they're tied to their service.
Okay. I haven't seen them in court, but I mean, I've seen them.
Well, I think that may be a function of the fact that certain officials don't go to court for whatever reason. I don't know.
Okay.
But I don't think that it's a prohibition.
I understand. Another text comes in, right, regarding, they want to know about a backlog and what is causing the backlog. Mm-hmm. And they want to know your opinion regarding, amend whatever constitutional law that we can have trials by judges in addition to trial by jury in order to reduce this backlog cases. Mm. Is that possible?
The pandemic has raised regionally, if not internationally. I tend to focus on the region personally because, I like to compare like with like. People have been looking at judge-alone trials in criminal matters. I won't express a view on that. It is something that if the practice is raised or advocated for in any substantive way, we will engage with it. But my members have not expressed a view in one way or the other in terms of advocating any substantive shift in the way that we conduct criminal matters at present. Now, we do have concerns in terms of the backlog, in terms of the way that our members are treated in the present system. Mm-hmm. We have concerns about the way criminal trials are done, don't get me wrong. But on that particular issue, not so much. What I would say is that we have to, we are in discussions with the new Chief Justice about the wholesale review of the public interaction with the legal system. You know, the backlog is one thing, but fundamentally it is about whether or not the public feels well served by their legal system. You know, I mean, we anticipate and we acknowledge that the backlog is a concern. That's a human resource issue. And that would speak to something else, which for my part was very important. The court services bill, I felt, and I continue to feel that the increased autonomy of the judiciary from the tether of civil service existence in terms of running to the FS or whoever else for budget and all of this other stuff, it really impacts the maneuverability and the dynamism of our judiciary to have to play that game. You know, for example, during COVID, trying to get money to get plexiglass up so we could get back into court. Mm-hmm. You know, some of those things are a bit counterproductive. And I think that this idea that, you know, we have to disabuse ourselves of some of these notions. You know, ultimately, Parliament is still in control. If you could pass the bill, you could repeal the bill. Mm-hmm. You know, if all hell breaks loose, we could revisit it. Mm-hmm. But nobody can say, to my mind, that it isn't a good that the Chief Justice and the bill as crafted would have a board that runs the judiciary. The president and bar council will have a seat on that board, the government. But my point is there's still transparency, there's still oversight. They would still have to get their money allocated by the government. So the controllers will always be there. So I don't want anybody to go down that Narnian path of, you know, they turn in everybody loose. You will still have a control. But what we really want is for the judiciary to really have the ability, the latitude to make decisions on a dynamic basis, to really get to the heart of some of our fundamental concerns. And on the civil side, you know, you will hear more about the new Supreme Court rules, and that we are looking forward to the introduction of. I would have liked, and I still would like, to see that accompanied by the introduction of the Court Services Bill, because I believe that fundamentally it is about freeing up that ability to make human resources decisions, to make spending decisions. That is really speaking to the backlog. And also...
No. I appreciate what you're saying, but I have a caller, and the caller want to engage you, and the caller texts me now. But let me see who this caller is, actually. I can imagine, right? But patch the caller through. Let me see if I should have done that. Go ahead, caller.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Beautiful. I'm Mr. Khalil Parker. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Beautiful. I would have asked this question, Mr. Nuri, if I could ask Mr. Khalil Parker. A question on the independence of the Bahamas judiciary. Mm-hmm. Mr. Parker, would you be familiar with a ruling made by Senior Justice, former now, John D. Lyons, deeming the Bahamas judiciary unconstitutional, not independent, and not impartial? And that judges, including the Chief Justice, there can be no new appointment of justice nor an extension of their tenure to the government of the Bahamas having broken the law in 2003 and 2006 by not appointing an independent body or sending recommendations to the Governor General to appoint an independent committee.
Okay. So I'll let him see if he can respond to that. Oh, go ahead. Are you willing to respond to that?
I've responded. I think I'm familiar with the call. I've responded to that before. I won't engage in the subject matter of the Lyons decision or the impact thereof. I will say this, and I hope that this satisfies her. I'm going to take this off.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. It remains my view that ideally speaking, we would have an independent Judicial Appointments Commission, much like they have in the UK, where you would have people who have aspirations. They would be vetted by a panel of judges, lawyers, government, whatever else. And then the commission, the Judicial Legal Service Commission, or the Prime Minister in certain circumstances would be able to select from those people who have been vetted in a transparent and independent process. I think that until we completely... until we do our best to demystify the judicial appointment process and make sure that it's as transparent and accountable as possible, you will always have people with these concerns without reference to any particular judge's decision.
And I have basically 30 seconds. What can I anticipate in your speech coming up? General.
I would say that you would get a taste of what has come today and a little bit more. I'm accountable to my members. I will be talking about the year that we've had, and I would be letting them in on things we plan to do on their behalf and the public going forward. I think that, you know, broadly speaking, that's where we are. I wouldn't get into any, you know, I've resisted and I will continue to resist any spoilers.
Okay. This has been Guardian Radio AM with Khalil Parker. Can I invite you back? Because I will have like 20 more questions I need to go in detail with.
Yeah, we're quite happy to return.
Good. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow. At least Wednesday. Tomorrow's a holiday, right? Happy Majority Rule Day. Bye-bye.